This is Benefits Like a Boss.
Welcome to the Benefits Like a Boss podcast, supported by Nonstop Administration and Insurance Services. Nonstop is a mission-driven employee health benefits advisor and third-party administrator, and we are committed to building health equity while reducing the cost of health insurance for employers and employees. For information on how to get better benefits for less, visit us at nonstopwellness.com.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. We are here to celebrate leaders and highlight industry experts who are out there making a difference in the world. The goal is to have candid conversations around workforce challenges and equity and inclusion key issues. I'm your host, Leslie Brown Albright, and I'm joined by my smart, quick-witted co-host, Natasha Orozco. Natasha, we've finally arrived. Can you believe we're making a podcast today?
We made it. We made it. We have fancy earphones.
Yes, check.
We've got legit microphones.
Check.
Stable internet.
Check.
I mean, we made it.
We're going to be speaking to David Sloves, the CEO of Nonstop Administration and Insurance Services, in just a moment here. And Natasha and I both work for David at Nonstop. Mm-hmm. Natasha, what do you think people should know about David?
I think what people should know first and foremost is that David is an advocate for humans. Mm-hmm. He sort of has kind of civic responsibility and advocacy in his bones. When I talk about David, because I do randomly and often, which is so strange because who talks about the CEO of their company, right? Like with a high degree of frequency, like no one, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm kind of compelled to do so when I talk about why I work for Nonstop, because he's really a part of that, right?
Yeah.
So he created this company that is sort of made for the people by the people.
Yeah. Yeah. Inspired by people.
Totally. And to help people, right? So he's such a human. First and foremost, he's such a human. He's such a compassionate, sort of civic-oriented human. And then a little bit beyond that is that he is a subject matter expert in some really important topics like economics, the insurance industry. He's a mathematician, a trained mathematician and economist. Mm-hmm. He is so well-versed in so many, again, subject matter areas that are intensely interesting and relevant, not only to our company, our industry, but really just kind of community, right? So when he talks about the various movements that he's been a part of and the companies that he started to kind of, you know, speak to the ailments of certain communities, you really get a sense that this man knows what he's talking about. And so to spend any time with him, whether it's 2 minutes or 2 hours, you learn a lot from him. And so he pulls from lots of different areas and again, from his expertise. And so it's just, he's a fascinating person, but most of all, he's a good person.
Yeah.
And so I'm really proud to work for David and I'm proud to work for Nonstop.
Yeah. I hope that he really gets into why he started Nonstop.
I will also give other people kind of the courage to start a project.
Yes.
Start a company or the very least start a dialogue and a conversation with a group of people. If you really want to make a difference and you have an idea, and you want to be able to put that idea to good use to help people, I think that this is an extraordinary example of how one idea of wanting to help people in a very specific area, right? Medical benefits really transformed into kind of a mini movement, which is, you know, Nonstop. And so I hope that it compels people to move forward with their ideas. If you have something that you know that can help humanity, if you see a need and you see a group of people that are struggling, you can have that discussion. You can have the idea. You can get some smart people around the table and you can really do something about it.
Natasha, I think that is completely beautiful and absolutely true. And I think without further ado, let's get into this conversation today. David, thank you so much for joining Natasha and myself on the podcast. We are very excited to have you here with us today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
David, Nonstop is out in the world doing some pretty important work in a very, very broken system, the healthcare system. How did this all start for you and why did you decide to create Nonstop?
I really decided I wanted to do something to support the nonprofit and educational communities and had the notion that something with the technology world around human services and human capital issues would be interesting. And so we started with this notion of providing a human capital software system in exchange for being the broker of record for their employee benefits. And it was a very straightforward notion, and we built a pretty solid basic platform to validate that we could do this. And we got some customers on it, and it was boring. We could do some good for them, but we didn't move the needle. We didn't help them in their competitive posture. We didn't really do much for their employees. And it was okay, but about the time we had the first generation of clients actually onboarding, I was introduced to someone who was doing a partial self-insurance product kind of as a side gig almost for his main business, which was doing stop-loss insurance for larger groups. And, you know, when he kind of showed me what he was doing, he said, you know, really, just so you know, it's just a loss leader for me to get people into the self-insured world and sell them stop loss in a TPA relationship. And I went, okay. And I looked at it and was like, after he left, I was like, you know, I've been looking at this self-insurance deal for almost 20 years. And this is the first time I've actually kind of felt like you could do it for businesses of the size I work with and I've been. And I decided to dive into it a bit. And so I spent, I don't know, almost 3 weeks just kind of whiteboarding it and playing with numbers and researching data as far as claims levels. And I came up with a fairly sophisticated, I guess I'll call it a calculus equation. You know, if you ever saw the movie Good Will Hunting, where he's got all these things on the board and all that, or any of those kind of crazy professor things, nothing like that. Okay. I mean, it's just a big string of algebra, but one after another, and then throwing time functions in it. And, you know, it isn't rocket science, but there's a lot. And so I said, okay, let me see what it looks like. And modeled it, went, huh, these are big numbers. You know, we could save people 10, even 15%. This could be for serious. And so I talked to some of the clients who we had onboarded and a couple we were planning on talking to who wanted to talk to us and said, by the way, would you be interested in a healthcare solution that saved you about 15% and your employees wouldn't have any out-of-pocket expenses? And they were like, yeah, crazy man. What are you talking about? And I said, no, seriously. And you know, unfortunately, a couple of these folks were either desperate enough or trusting enough to let us take a rip at it. And so we started with a couple of folks and onboarded them. And what we really hit upon was we really hit two or three hot buttons. I mean, the first mission of the business of leveling the playing field for nonprofits and giving them something impactful, big check. The savings in the thousands of dollars per person were huge. And the real value was the human capital value of people's healthcare being fully usable, because that was the second thing, the first dollar coverage, which we did in part because we thought it would make more sense, but in part because it was a lot easier to administer. We were like, huh, all these people do copays and co-insurances. This can't make any sense. It costs more goddamn money to do co-payments than it can possibly be worth. So by doing the first dollar coverage and literally eliminating any cost uncertainty in your medical coverage, employees were really stoked about this. And so it gave us the second big lever for these nonprofits. Not only did they save a bunch of money, which to be sure is how we got most of our clients in the early days, but we also made the human capital equation way more powerful. And as we looked at it and we listened to this, it kind of hit the third marker for me. I mean, it really felt good to go, hey, this thing is broken. It's sucking the life out of the economic system, particularly for people, you know, up to the 70th percentile of wages in this country, where you've gutted their savings. You've gutted their college plans for their kids. You've gutted their retirement plans over now two generations of this insanity. And, you know, I mean, it really called to me. And so as we move forward, you know, we began to really beat the drum on that message.
What was your biggest competitive problem in the market, and how has the company evolved over the years?
You know, it's taken a long time for people to believe us. Too good to be true. That was our number one competitive problem for years. And now people come to us and go, yeah, how do we work with you? Mm-hmm. And that's been really a bit of a revelation for us as well, because, you know, we came into this, both myself and two other members of my founding team, having worked with brokers in our last business and not loved it, as you might get a flavor from my first comments. And so we weren't really in this ideal world, really interested in partnering with these folks who were the whole reason we had started this thing is because of their behavior. Mm-hmm. And so it took a lot. And we also had to really trust that the product itself had really matured. And over the last couple of years, we brought everything in-house, claims processing, all the other systems. Mm-hmm. And so it started as kind of a loose federated product. Now we do end-to-end the whole thing. And so we felt good about doing it.
Yeah, we've matured as a company.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, and we've done it without gutting our soul, which I think is really, you know, for, again, I like the money side of it. I like what we do for people. I like us as a for-profit business being able to do it profitably. It allows us to scale the business, to serve more people. There's certainly economic gains that come with that for the organization and the people who work here. But at the end of the day, I'm at a point in my life where the joy of it really comes from knowing that what we're doing is literally changing the game for the people who we serve.
Right. I think this is a good segue because I'm really compelled by something that you said a little bit earlier in the conversation about how kind of the financial crisis of the 2000s, were a huge threat to most industries, but most notably nonprofits, for very obvious reasons. And so, you know, presently, the nonprofit community and really the world at large is facing yet another crisis, a magnitude that we've never seen before, and that's COVID. So the question is, how do you think COVID will reshape the employee health benefits or carrier landscape long term? And I mean, in your infinite wisdom, because we know that you do math problems that are really complicated. What do you think this is going to look like for years to come?
So I am, they call economics the dark science for a reason. And that's because it typically deals with things like scarcity and negative outcomes. And so I guess I'll undress that one first and just simply say when COVID hit and I did the quick analysis of the likely outcomes, I assumed we were going to go into a fairly large-scale worldwide depression. Mm. And the difference between a recession and depression is longevity and the depth of the drop in gross domestic product.
Yeah.
And my quick guess back of the napkin was 18-20% drop in gross domestic product for a minimum of 6 and maybe as long as 18 months, depending on how quickly people could adapt socially to the realities of a highly transmittable, you know, pandemic environment. So that was kind of the obvious outcome. And we hit that real quickly. And, you know, there was all this excitement over the summer. Oh, we're done with this and we're in this V-shaped recovery and it's great and it's the best ever. And I was like, yeah, well, for a guy who's never been out of equities and believes in growth pretty much to the core of his being, I'm in cash about half now. So I was here to be the world's dumbest contrarian, or this is a bunch of smoke. Mm. And sadly, I was not the world's dumbest contrarian. I would have liked to have been. And so when I look at it and I look at what I see in our claims and I look at the unemployment figures and I talk to the CEOs and CFO of my clients and my suppliers for that matter, you know, we're clearly in a deep morass still. And, you know, and the specifics in the benefits world are really an odd little bit from where I sit, because I look at the insurance carriers who ultimately backstop what is behind nonstop wellness, because we top out at 6,500 basically. Mm-hmm. And most of COVID has been covered without any member exposure. So the insurance companies have totally picked it up.
Right.
And I talk to them and yeah, they've been impacted that. And then the flip side is all the spending that people haven't been able to do. And in our claims world, that's almost 20% below what we expect. Mm-hmm. So when I talk about that 20% economic reduction, I'm modeling it on 30,000 human beings' daily spending habits. Mm-hmm. And literally being able to see it every day in an area that's not discretionary particularly, and it's still down 20%. You know, it popped for a moment in October in the first 2 weeks. And then, we started spiking up and boom.
Yep. Makes sense.
Okay. Again, the first week or two in December, it looked like it might spike up, but really it was just people trying to do what they could get done before all hell broke loose, both as far as the virus and frankly, just holiday plans.
Yeah.
And now it's home again. So, I look at if healthcare spending in the box we're in is diminished, what's the bounce going to be? And, it's an odd thing. I mean, services generally don't have the ability to recover. There's a basic saying in service economics, which is inventory not consumed is lost. Hours don't come back. And in the medical services area, that's a real truism. If you missed your dental appointment for this quarter because you couldn't get in, or last quarter or both, and you restart getting cleanings, you're never going to get that cleaning you missed back.
I see, yeah.
Right.
Or your checkup.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or whatever it is you were doing every quarter, you're not going to get that back. And so that's just a gap. How much is there going to be additional spending because of people who are chronically impacted? It's really interesting talking to the carriers. The range of experiences we're seeing is $25 per human being per month in one large carrier that they're budgeting. So $300 a year for everybody who's in their covered pool of clientele, down to as low as a 1.5%, which in most carrier worlds, we're $5,000 a year is the number, is $75. So, you're talking about, now multiply it by 300 million people.
Yeah.
And, it's kind of a real number, $20 billion a year, a billion here, a billion there. It adds up to a nice small fraction of Bill Gates. But against the healthcare system, that's really peanuts, honestly. So I don't expect it to have a huge impact on what it costs to get services. What I expect instead is the X percentage of people who are chronic are going to have their quality of life diminished for likely the rest of their lives, but certainly for a goodly amount of time. And you can see that already with some of these folks in New York, where Cedars-Sinai has got 60 doctors now working with people who are post-COVID new symptoms, not COVID, but new symptoms, no energy. You see a 40-something-year-old woman who is a world-class marathoner for her age who can't walk two blocks.
Wow.
And you see things like that and you go, well, okay, these are onesie twosies. Oh, no. 60 doctors worth at Cedars-Sinai in New York is not onesie twosie. It's thousands and thousands. So I would suspect that you're talking about probably a million chronic folks who survive it but are impacted. And how long it takes to recover from that, I'm a finance person. I'm not a medical person.
Yeah.
So it's dart throwing when I talk about it.
Sure.
That's right. Yeah.
I think it's really interesting that you were just sort of leaning into my next question here. And I read this article in Benefits Pro, and it was talking about how relationships are central to employee health. And they mentioned that companies' values were on display right now. And we're talking about COVID, racial injustice, public health. Really, it kind of came down to employees wanting to know, does my employer give a crap about me as a human being? So can you talk about why it's important to you as a leader to take a bold stand on these workplace challenges and societal issues that really, really impact all of us, whether we're at work or in our home lives, and why you share company values, our company values at Nonstop, so openly with the public?
Sure. So I think first off, I think one of the things about COVID and work from home is if your company was fortunate, and we were, to be able to do work from home and really not miss too much of our operating structure, it was hard from our go-to-market strategy because we use a lot of event marketing and a lot of face-to-face work with people. We have a complicated area that we're in. And it's nice to be able to meet people and really talk to them about what we do. So that presented some challenges, but really, when you talk about the greater good things, we had a good year and we did remarkably well. So I think part of this is simply being able to breathe through it gives you the ability to talk about things without being in crisis. And I think it's very hard to, you know, be at your best generally as a human when the world is falling down on your shoulders. So I give a certain amount of latitude to people on this. I think for me, however, I mean, ultimately, I started this business because I had a chip on my shoulder about the way human beings were being treated. I think doubly so because I felt like the industry I had given 20 years of my life to had, if not squandered the high ground entirely, certainly left a lot of mixed messages about its behaviors, both in the way it treats one another competitively, how it treats people, how it has glass ceilings, locked doors. I mean, all those things, depending on whether we're talking about gender, sexual orientation, people of color. I mean, you know, so the tech sector, while in many respects it's modern and newer and, you know, a lot more sensitive, in a lot of ways, that's a bunch of bullshit, frankly. And so there was a certain amount of chippiness that I brought to this just because it was disappointing to watch the stuff. But when I looked at it from a more broad context, and look, I mean, 2020 may be many things, but I think it's the year that at least half the U.S. workforce got a lot of time to think about things. And, you know, probably way too much time to think about things. And in the midst of that, we watched our racial failures for, you know, almost 330 years come into full flower once again, and which opened up the conversation not only about people of color, but the indigenous people. And you know, all of a sudden, this little wound, which never is healed and was just always oozes a little or a lot, depending on whether you're a person of color or not, all of a sudden it was gushing again. And because it happened in living color with video cameras in a way that was beyond gruesome, beyond anybody's ability to go, yeah, you know, judgment call, it brought about a conversation that has not happened in my lifetime. And I grew up in the 60s, you know, and 70s, when civil rights and the Voting Rights Act and a lot of other legislative changes brought about what nominally looked to be bringing about the great society that the Johnson administration, you know, ballied about as their objective. And the fails on that were fairly obvious. You didn't have to be super sophisticated to see that the regression probably from the point of the oil crisis in the mid-70s, accelerating in the Reagan era, you know, and then absolutely going through a full wipeout in the 21st century, particularly in the Trump era. You know, we had gone back to the 1950s or worse in some cases. And so I think that became, for people who genuinely value the libertarian / liberal values that America likes to espouse. And to be sure, those are two different constructs of politics, but they have the same root, the notion of individual liberty and the ability of the individual to work together collectively on a voluntary basis. We were failing. And I think that not giving voice to that, you're just simply trying to be an ostrich and bury your head in the sand. And I think as a leader of any organization, you know, when people are thinking about something and it's impacting them and you aren't willing to have an opinion, you're having an opinion by the absence of one. And given what we do in particular and the equity about healthcare and the access to care and the destructiveness of our healthcare system, it really... those values really mesh with our product. And so when they come to light, apart from the healthcare industry, to pretend they're not related issues is to me just a disservice to your people and to yourself.
Right. David, now that's a conscious choice that you're making, right? As a leader, you are leading a company through a pandemic. You're taking care of your people, your staff, you're taking care of your clients. And then you're taking a stand on some really charged topics. And I know that you feel really passionate about it because I work for Nonstop, but I think that just that's who you are. You take a stand regardless because you That's who you are. So I want to ask you a question, David. Talk to us a little bit about decision-making fatigue, because there's a lot of decisions that you've had to make as of late, certainly. And so I'd like to hear a little bit from you how real this is, and do you experience it, and be vulnerable with us. And talk a little bit about how you get beyond it so that you're able to make these very critical decisions and kind of, you know, stake the claims that are right and just on behalf of the people you serve in your company.
Well, I think 2020 is the first time in my life I've been exhausted on an ongoing basis. The inability to move about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The caged animal effect, I think, is a huge mental health problem for most people. And I'm enough ADHD oriented to really be surprised at just how impactful that's been on me. But I think in this case, you know, some of the decisions that we've been forced to make have been very, very modest in the pain perspective versus what they could have been. When we first took a look at things in March, I did essentially three budget revisions. Revision one, which is what we ended up doing to start with, keep 100% employment. Everybody keeps their job. Only high wage people take cuts in income. Travel had ended, so that was a non-event, and really cut discretionary expenses as hard as we could, and allow for then about an 8 or 10% destruction of our client base, i.e., you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of one out of every 10 would go away. Okay. And the second level was 25%, and the third level was 40%. You know, we prepare the contingency plans for that as best we could. And we then decided we would tough it out. We got the PPP loan, figuring that, you know, we could then handle the 8% and the 25% without huge cuts in the business. The 40% cut would have been unbelievably painful. And then I would have had decision-making fatigue. Okay. Yeah. Call it whatever you want to call it. It's
sure.
A crap job. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, cause you know, you're not cutting at that point on the margins based on your B versus C and D performers. You're saying to your A's and B's, sorry, some of you guys are going, it's stock.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, and so we were fortunate we didn't have to do that, and we were doubly fortunate. Our clients are tough as nails. I knew that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, nonprofits and educational institutions that can grow large enough where they can be our clients in our self-insured model, by definition, are already badass. I mean,
that's right.
You know,
yeah.
When you build a business without much equity capital and without a whole lot of support from the world beyond yourselves, and you get to 100, 200, 500, 1,000 employees, you're just a badass.
Totally, yes. Yeah.
And so I kind of realized early on as I talked to these folks, and we helped some of them out with, you know, getting deferrals from carriers and helping them figure out how to slow pay, who they could slow pay, and what that was worth in dollars. And we worked with a lot of CFOs and a lot of CEOs, you know, I realized these folks were really tough and that they were going to get through it. And a lot of them furloughed a big chunk of their staff, but kept them on benefits.
That's right.
Yeah.
So not only was that great for the employees, but since we managed those benefits, it meant we didn't even see the impact of those furloughs beyond the obvious observation that if they didn't come back at some point, we would get that 8 or 9% cut.
Right.
But what we observed was, you know, those guys and gals, and actually more women than men in our client base at the senior decision-making levels, you know, they adjusted. And, you know, when you see your clients who you already have chosen as the people you want to work with, doing heroic is one of those terms that gets tossed about pretty casually. And I'm not saying every nonprofit leader is a hero. That's trite. But I'm going to tell you, when you're dealing with the CHCs and you're dealing with COVID and you're dealing with a situation where you're the only healthcare system in a community or a bunch of communities, and I'd say about a quarter of our clients are rural and they're it. There isn't hospitals. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, and so they were it. And even the urban ones, in many cases in their communities, again, they were it. They were the first line responders. And when these folks could stand up to that, it would be demeaning to them to not get our cock out together and hold my own cock out together and be serious about this. And so
you definitely have grandkids, David Kaka. You definitely have grandkids.
Well, when I say,
I love it.
When I say crap, that offends some people. And clearly I can go down lower than that in my New York motor real fast. So, you know, you kind of look for, you know, the mom, dad kind of okay language thing, right?
Sure.
But no, I mean, at the end of the day on this stuff, it's hard to be fatigued when people are inspiring you by what they're able to achieve in crisis. And so at a work level, I was really able to draft off of what they were doing. And when we did these events and these folks explained what was going on, when we did follow-up calls behind them and helped or just talked through what they were going through, it was just like supercharging. And so I never really reached that point of view in the work mode. I think it was much harder outside of the work mode just because no travel for vacation, no travel for work for road warriors. And I'm not as much of a road warrior as maybe 20% of my company that spends half their lives on the road, you know, but I spend a lot of time traveling and I like it.
Sure, sure. What is your perception of, you know, the heart of many of the organizations that we work with, the HR department, and how they've come together to work with Nonstop this year?
This has been an unbelievable roller coaster. Are people going to be employed? How to handle unemployment? How to handle COBRA? What's furlough versus unemployment? How do you bring people back on? How do you deal with the facilities issues, testing issues, check-in issues? I mean, so many additional things. So I think it has been very draining on the HR departments in almost all organizations. And I think when they look at their benefits, it's been an odd year. Normally, HR folks aren't the ones reaching out to us for help as far as new clients and people reaching out to us. I think we've probably had more of that this year than ever before. And I think part of that's that just the number of online events that we've been party to that have attracted HR people has given them more exposure to us. But I also think it's that they are desperately looking for wins right now.
Hmm.
All their work this year, a huge percentage has been, you know, damage control, losses. How do I make it less worse? You know, how do we survive? And so I've now had two or three folks in my sales organization say, hey, you know, we got this deal because the HR person was hell-bent on improving her benefits this year. There's going to be a lot of people who come out of this with a new sense of purpose and a higher level of intention. And I think that when you talk to folks about the donor model this year, one of the things that I've heard again and again is not only more donors, higher donor number of dollars per donation, but more frequency. And that where generally they find people who are once a year, this year those people have done it twice a year. Some of them done it three times and not have given smaller amounts each time, but the same amount each time.
Yeah.
And it may fall into there's less to spend our money on. And it may just be generally people wanting to help one another on a larger scale than we give ourselves credit for.
Yeah.
Because it's so easy to get sucked into the political diatribe,
right,
that you kind of lose some of the narrative that's the other 23 and a half hours a day.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, because even the most intense non-politician observer of politics in 2020, I think, had a limited capacity to get too wound about it. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's my experience of it, at least.
Yeah. 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 And so I want to ask one last sort of insight. I would like to ask for your parting words, David. What words can you offer leaders? You laugh, but you're so good. You're so good. It really, everything you say sort of.
I understand what you're asking. Go ahead. You don't have to dress it up, though.
David, I have lipstick on. Okay. I'm going to dress it all the way up.
I feel like a piece of corn on that glass tray that's getting the butter put on it right now. Make it a little sweeter.
So, David, what parting words can you offer leaders who have joined us today?
Look, I think the best thing you can say about 2020 is it's ending. I mean, I don't know, but I think the fatigue is the biggest thing I'd speak to, which is that this too shall pass, and that already without any real depth to the vaccination process, but simply to its existence, I think it was poignant that the British television networks 100% show the first woman getting vaccinated, this 90-year-old fun lady getting vaccinated and interviewed her, because it brought hope. And it brought hope at a human level that this 90-year-old piece of work was like, yeah, I need to get out of this joint. I mean, you know, it's like, wow, you're in a care facility. And I'm not exactly sure where you're going, but damn it, if you can be pumped about it, we can be pumped about it for you. Yeah. And I think that that's probably, as leaders, one of the things, you know, my wife used to, in her early days of trying to figure out how to make money for her family, got involved with Mary Kay. And Mary Kay, one of their sales tenets always was fake it until you make it. Okay. You may not know a damn thing about how to sell, but we're going to show you how to talk the talk until you actually understand it. And so I think as leaders, there's a lot of times where we have to fake it until we make it about positive things. These are not easy times. They're not. There's no question about the fatigue issues and the just plain old difficulties, past tense, present tense, future tense, that are real. And yet at a certain level, leadership is about rallying people to move forward. It's about preparing them to adapt to change. It's about making change less negative, ideally positive, and providing people with that vision that the how is worth it because of the why. And, you know, and I think that's more true in a crisis type environment than ever, because people need to hear it. They need to feel that there is someone who is not just, you know, in despair and is just playing out the string, because they may be feeling that way. Their family may be challenged by it. And so they need to have a sense of, if not absolute strength, at least solidity. And I think that's the other word. I think that feeling solid about what you're doing and knowing that even if these are difficult times, you know, I had a very meaningful interaction with one of our clients who has had to do a lot of financial work this year to survive. And he said to me, he said, you know, I look at 2021 and I have a couple of big issues that I'm dealing with, but we're going to get through it. And I'm on to 2022 right now. And I'm thinking to myself, damn, when I talked to you in April, you weren't sure you're going to make it to May. And yeah. I'm talking in 2020 about 2022.
That's amazing.
Well done. Okay. And you know, and that to me was super instructive. Not that his life is easy, not that all is well in his business, but that he's already said, we're going to make it, and I need to plan now for the world beyond even the 12 months in front of me. And I was like, excellent. You know, and I came out of that going, damn, that's the message I want to hear from people, which is we will survive. We will figure out ways of adapting. And it's my job to make sure that my crew is around for that and is an agitator and an innovator and an enabler of other people doing it with us. And I think that's really kind of the really simple message. You know, you need to have your people know you're advocating, you're innovating, and you're making it possible for other people to be successful. And if you do that, you're going to get people going, okay, well, I can get my head around that. And even if they don't understand or agree with everything you're saying, just the energy you bring to that matters.
Totally. And then your employees won't be so fear-based. So they're going to have access to their better selves, their best selves, because they're going to be more solid, as you say, mm-hmm. right? Because they're looking at their leader, not fear-based, planning for the future. And that's really comforting. And it does make you feel more solid. Again, you're able to access your logic, your creativity, because you're not surviving. I think that's really important.
And look, the flip side of that, I think, is equally critical for leaders. And I think that's the other aspect of it. You're right. That whole portion of your brain that needs a sense of clarity, logic, forward movement. But I also think you need the hearts, not just the minds. And that people have to genuinely believe in your intentions A, because of trust, for sure, but more than that, because otherwise they can't be in their emotional space and be comfortable that's part of their work role. And you get a lot less of them if you don't make that possible. And I think that's one of the things that Nonstop, as a culture, has been able to really build into what we do fairly remarkably well across the organization, because it's easy when I work with my impassioned leadership in the marketing space. Natasha is one of my poster children for that impassioned style of leadership. But when I see my member services team and my substantiation team, billing, areas that are kind of cut and dry and not really part of the love train, you know, feeling the same way and feeling like when somebody calls us, they're going to step it up and, you know, I'm going to find a way to make this work for you. If I can't do it, I'm going to make somebody else do it. And if they can't do it, I'm going to send it to David because he's going to have to step in here. And they're not asking me. Yeah. I mean, and I love it when I've got hourly folks who are saying, you need to handle this. I'm like, damn, all right, well done. You know, and I think when I get pumped about our success is when I get the folks who are not my direct reports being pretty assertive about solving problems because they're passionate about it. And I think that's kind of the last bit of the leadership equation is really making it clear that that heart-centric approach counts.
Yeah, I think you've hit on a lot of reasons why Natasha and I really like to work here at Nonstop. I didn't know anything about health insurance, and I came over here strictly due to the mission and the leaders that were here in this organization. And, you know, I think you really empower us to be who we are as people, and just thank you for that.
Right. As Leslie said, we feel really safe in that space to talk about how we feel about Nonstop, because we feel about Nonstop in a lot of instances the way we've never felt before for, you know, an employer. We feel committed because we feel safe and solid and taken care of, and we believe in how you lead it. So thank you for that. Truly.
You're welcome most of the time, other than when I'm under the sharp stick. Because, yeah, that happens too. My perfection is greatly overrated, sadly.
All right, David. So thank you so much for joining us today. And we've really had just a great time talking with you. Yeah. So we're going to finish up our show, like we do every show, with our five quick answer questions.
Oh, God.
Now, these are questions that we're going to ask you rapidly. You just fire off, give us a one word, two word answer on whatever comes to your mind. So, all right. Are you ready?
Let's go. Speed dating.
Okay, here we go. What's an attribute that comes to mind when someone says bold leader?
Heart.
Where do you find peace?
Beach, mountains, but more beach as I get older.
When you hear the word vulnerability, what do you think of?
I have images of people living in the street around the world. I mean, San Francisco is the first thing. India is the second thing. And the fact that it's that order is messed up.
What's your favorite meal?
Well, it's funny that that's a hard one for me. I'm going to say really world-class sushi.
Mm. David, what wine would you pair with it?
A really good cold sake. I don't know. I'm not expert on that. I actually would probably pair. That's probably not true. I'd probably do one of those big tall bottles of Sapporo. Actually.
Oh, me too. Same, David.
I'm not that highbrow.
All right. Last question. Who is your hero?
Boy, that's an interesting one. I really equivocate on that. I probably would have said Bobby Kennedy years ago. Only because I thought that things he was doing, as I've gotten to know more about him, probably not so much anymore. And oddly enough, in some funny ways, I might say, I might actually say Eleanor Roosevelt now. Oddly enough, I think, you know, there's a series on first ladies, and I've not been watching it with my wife because I can't keep up with her content torrents, but that one called to me. And I watched it, and it reminded me all over again why I thought she was impactful. And I was even more wowed by her.
Amazing. David, well, thank you so much for joining Natasha and I today on the podcast. It's always an honor to speak with you. And thank you for sharing your insights, your inspiration, and just generally for being you. And thank you for your time today. We really appreciate having you here with us.
Thank you.
This is July.
Wow, Natasha, that was a really great conversation today. And I'd like to just sort of wrap everything up with a nice bow. What were your key takeaways for today, or what were the highlights for you?
I think one of the highlights for me is always just listening to David talk, period, because you never know where he's going to go. And when he gets there, it's really interesting.
Yes.
So there was a lot of takeaways. It's almost like I want to listen to this again. Mm-hmm. And I want to kind of rewind the conversation because there are so many sort of nuggets, right?
True.
And so I think that for me personally, one of the most interesting parts of this was really his vision for creating an easier system, his vision for bucking an already sort of, you know, detrimental and corrupt system.
Absolutely.
And just his bravery and his courage to stand up for the nonprofit community. I come from the nonprofit community. I've only ever worked for nonprofits. And so David is my hero in that respect.
Yeah.
What are takeaways for you?
For me, I love hearing how he started all of this. I love where he came from. I love how he brought the chippiness, as he calls it. Mm. You know, he had this fire in his belly. He had an idea. He carried it through, and he's really about serving people. Mm. We need to take care of these folks that are taking care of our nation's most vulnerable. And this is the way he saw that he could best do that. And he made it happen. I mean, it's pretty inspiring, actually.
I agree.
All right. Well, thank you everyone out there who joined us today. Natasha and I had a great time talking to David.
Totally.
And if you do have any feedback on our conversation today, please go ahead and contact us through nonstopwellness.com. And until then, take care of each other, stay safe, and be well.
Benefits like a boss.
Today's episode was supported by Nonstop Administration and Insurance Services. Nonstop believes that healthcare should be affordable and accessible. If employee health benefits are a workforce or financial challenge for your organization, visit us at nonstopwellness.com.